The project I'm going to discuss today is actually a partnership of two healthcare organizations in the Chicagoland area, Advocate Healthcare and Sinai Health System. And this project was funded through the support of the Michael Reist Health Trust. Just to give you some background, I'm going to first discuss some background information and then describe the intervention itself. Then I'll go into some results of our intervention, lessons learned and challenges, and then end with some limitations and finally with conclusions. In terms of background, perhaps not all people are aware that when you use the term deaf with a capital D, that it's referring to a cultural and linguistic group of people who generally are prelingually deafened, meaning that they're deaf before the age of three, and use American Sign Language as their primary language. American Sign Language is different than English. It's not simply a visual representation of English. It actually has its own grammar and syntax. So for this population, English is actually a second language for them. And so many people think that you can just write something down in English and someone who's deaf would be able to understand, but that's not the case. And lip reading is also very ineffective communication. Only about a third of what is being lip read is actually comprehended. So it's important to have that as information about deaf culture. Also, deaf are at increased risk for deficits in health knowledge and healthy living. And we know this based on anecdotal evidence of general low English proficiency in this population, as well as presence of deaf people in low socioeconomic brackets and empirical knowledge from deaf healthcare providers. Some additional background information. Our first step was to conduct a comprehensive health survey with deaf adults, and we had 203 adults who participated in this. The survey was conducted in American Sign Language by an interviewer who is bilingual in both English and American Sign Language. And the results were pretty alarming. We found that levels of knowledge about health and healthy behaviors were generally low across most topic areas, where 40% of respondents could not identify a single warning sign of a heart attack, such as chest pain. And that's in comparison to another study of the general U.S. population where only 10% could not identify a single warning sign of a heart attack. In addition, 60% of respondents could not identify a single warning sign of stroke, and this is in comparison to a study that found in the general U.S. population only 43% could not identify this. So you can see that health knowledge in this population is significantly lower than in the general U.S. population. Some additional findings from this survey were that 40% of the respondents reported having depressive symptoms, 75% of those being from a mental health care setting, and 16% from a primary health care setting. So armed with this information, we also conducted focus groups and developed a three-year demonstration project that had an eight-week class format. And we had a pre-post-test design. The pre-test was administered during week one of the intervention, and the post-test during week eight. We also had a three-month follow-up to look at sustainability of any improvements in knowledge and self-efficacy and behaviors. And it was led by deaf health educators and conducted in American Sign Language. Classes were held throughout the Chicagoland area. And our goal was to evaluate the effectiveness of two health education interventions on health knowledge, self-efficacy, and self-management. The two major topic areas were self-management of depression and prevention of cardiovascular disease. And these two topics were chosen because of the results that you saw from our survey, as well as from results of the focus groups. So participants were either recruited, and if they were eligible for one, they were then enrolled into one, but generally they were not enrolled into both interventions. So they either were enrolled in self-management of depression if they met that eligibility criteria, or prevention of cardiovascular disease. And so here are the eligibility criteria. they had to be 18 years or older, deaf, and proficient in American Sign Language, since that's the language that was used for the interventions themselves. Additional eligibility criteria for each of the interventions: for the self-management of depression, they needed to score positive for depression using the Beck Depression Inventory 2, and a score of 20 or higher was considered positive for depression, or they need to be referred by a mental health care provider with a diagnosis of depression. For the cardiovascular disease intervention, they needed to have one or more risk factors for cardiovascular disease, which you can see there, or they need to currently be receiving treatment for cardiovascular disease or for one of its risk factors. This shows recruitment flow for each of the interventions, with the self-management of depression being in on the left-hand side in the deep blue, and the lighter blue being the cardiovascular disease intervention. And what I wanted to point out here is that of the 105 that were eligible for the depression intervention, 102 agreed to participate. And of the 187 that were eligible for the cardiovascular disease intervention, 184 agreed to participate. So we had very high participation rates for each of these interventions. Now, when we look at retention, we can see that for self-management of depression, we had 102 that agreed to participate. Of those, about three-quarters were enrolled, and then about another three-quarters of those who were enrolled completed the intervention. And I'll discuss that a little bit more and at the end as to why we think that we had some difficulty with the retention in that intervention in particular. For the prevention of cardiovascular disease intervention, we had, as I mentioned, 184 who agreed to participate. 90% of those were enrolled, and then of those enrolled, 90% completed the intervention. There are a couple of people in these numbers who did participate in both interventions, and so they are only captured in the results for the intervention which they participated in first. So first I'm going to go over the self-management of depression intervention. In terms of participant characteristics among those 72 who were enrolled, you can see that the majority were female. Over three-quarters were from the suburbs of Chicago with a median age of 40 years. The majority were non-Hispanic white and had a greater than high school education. Although even though they over half reported a greater than high school education, you can see that still 65% were reporting a household income of $20,000 or less per year. 40% reported working full or part-time, and 49%, about half, had public health insurance, and about a third reported private health insurance. And it's not on there, but another 11% reported self-pay. Our goals for this intervention were to increase knowledge of depression. We measured that with a knowledge questionnaire. To increase self-efficacy to manage depression symptoms more effectively. To increase the likelihood that participants would adopt one or more self-management behaviors. And to decrease levels of depression among participants. And because I have limited time here, I'm just going to discuss the findings relating to the last goal, which was to decrease levels of depression among participants. This here shows you the Beck Depression Inventory 2. It's actually made up of 21 statements designed to measure the severity of depression. And you can see that one of the eligibility criteria was to score 20 or more on this scale. And just shows you there that the higher the score, the more severely depressed the person was. So here are some of the results. You can see here, this figure shows median Beck scores at screening, baseline, week 8, and 3-month follow-up. So baseline was our pretest, week 8 was our post-test, and then the 3-month follow-up. And you can see that from baseline to week 8 and from baseline to the 3-month follow-up, there was a significant decrease in median Beck scores among participants, meaning that their level of depression symptoms decreased significantly over time. And I put the screening in there just to show you that there was, even though it looks visually, there was no statistically significant difference between median scores at screening and baseline. And we are also interested in looking at those who were most severely depressed at baseline. So that would be those participants who were 28 or more, scored 28 or more on the Beck Depression Inventory at baseline. So they had essentially had severe depression at the beginning of the intervention. And you can see that their scores also significantly dropped at the post-test and at the three-month follow-up. And interestingly, from screening to baseline, it looks like it increased, although that was not statistically significant. So just some of the key findings, we also found that there was an increase in depression knowledge, an increase in emergency response knowledge, so they knew that if they felt like they wanted to kill themselves, that they needed to call 911 and get help. we also found an increase in self-efficacy to participate in positive self-management behaviors and an increase in positive behaviors such as different relaxation techniques. And now I'm going to briefly describe our prevention of cardiovascular disease. In terms of the participant characteristics, it's a little bit different for this. You can see that only about half were female. The majority were from the suburbs. It's an older sample where the mean age was 60. Overwhelmingly non-Hispanic white participants, with 43% reporting greater than high school education. Almost half were retired and a third working full or part-time. And then finally, about half reported public health insurance and about half private health insurance. And again, here we wanted to increase knowledge about cardiovascular disease, self-efficacy to change CVD risk factors, and increase the likelihood that participants would change one or more of their risk behaviors. And again, due to time limitations, I'm just going to describe our findings in relation to improving knowledge of cardiovascular disease among participants. So, we had actually a set of 10 questions to evaluate this with a score range of 0 to 10. And it measured heart attack and stroke warning signs, their knowledge regarding that, risk factors, emergency response, and behaviors to decrease a person's risk. And you can see that from baseline to the end of the intervention and to the three-month follow-up that there was a significant increase in median scores, so their knowledge improved over the intervention period. And these are just a couple of the questions included in that 10-item questionnaire, and I just wanted to highlight two of them. One being the second item, which it says that a leg won't move is a warning sign for a stroke, and only about half of participants knew that at the beginning, but at the end of the intervention, that increased to about three-quarters. And just slightly lower at the three-month follow-up, although still significantly improved over baseline. Another item was to call 911 and take an aspirin if you think you're having a heart attack. A little over half knew that at baseline, but you can see that that significantly improved to almost 90% at the post-test and three-month follow-up. Again, we saw improved knowledge, not only with cardiovascular disease, but also with nutrition knowledge. We asked several nutrition questions. We also saw an improvement in self-efficacy and specific behaviors. Around the behaviors, it was mostly dietary behaviors, adopting more healthy behaviors, eating fruits and vegetables, etc. So overall, we learned that it is possible to implement a culturally and linguistically appropriate health education intervention, utilizing best practices for the management of self-management of depression and prevention of cardiovascular disease. We did have a couple of concerns with recruitment and retention, specifically that it was difficult to recruit minority participants, specifically African-American participants, and we think that was mostly due to the fact that we did not have health educators who were African-American. We had difficulty with retention, specifically in the depression intervention, and we believe that's likely due to the nature of depression, being that it's difficult for participants to be motivated, to get out of bed, and so we think that explains that finding. In terms of scheduling classes, we had a variety of participants, younger, older adults, mothers, so we needed to schedule classes at times that were convenient for them, and we were able to do that. We also had some challenges with transportation costs, and we were able to give participants a $10 compensation at the end of each class to help with that. We weren't able to provide child care, though, and that remains a challenge for these types of interventions. In terms of evaluation, we, in order to standardize the evaluation, we actually videotaped a person using American Sign Language and then had that as the evaluation tool for each class so that every participant was had the same sign language being used. And there was some difficulty with the evaluation just because a lot of our participants had not been included in research projects before, so they weren't used to being evaluated and taking tests of sort at the beginning and the end. So we actually decided to have week one and week eight solely for evaluation and gave plenty of time for breaks and questions and things like that to make it a little bit easier for participants. Overall, though, they loved the classes and asked if we could provide them with more. They're very enthusiastic about it and still continue to be, so we are working with others to see if they can take on presenting some of these classes, and also we're going to be providing all the materials free of charge. In terms, I already went through recruitment and some of the recommendations for that, but in terms of course length, the participants had to be at 6 of the 8 sessions in order to be considered a completer, and so you have to juggle having an 8-week session with people's ability to actually participate for 8 weeks, which was a challenge. So I have to stop now, but we have a few limitations, such as self-selection bias, no control group, and questionnaire validity, although we feel we were able to sufficiently meet some of these limitations and still have positive findings and be pretty sure of our findings. I just wanted to thank our study participants, the project team, and the Michael Reese Health Trust for funding this project. Thank you.